After a long, hard ride, the highlight for Andy being the wild turkey he'd shot for their dinner, the two men sat sipping coffee. Having finished all he wanted of the turkey, Andy sat on the ground a little way from the dwindling campfire. The night was warm enough that he didn't need the heat.
You're studying me awful hard.
I was wondering, with your Indian raising, why you ever decided to be a ranger. Rangers and Comanches have fought one another ever since Stephen F. Austin's time.
It's more like the life I had with the Comanches than the life I had on your farm.
But it's not a job you'd want to spend the rest of your years at. Even if you could depend on it, which you can't. The state's always running out of money. You never know from one month to the next if you'll get paid.
Money's not the main thing.
It's easy to say money's not important when you've got a little in your pocket. It looks different when you don't have any. First time the state's money gets tight, they'll cut the rangers again. Folks back in East Texas will say the Indian fighting is done, so there's no use spending the tax money. But let a bank get robbed or somebody get killed, and they'll holler, "Where's the rangers?"
Hear that?
It's just an owl in the tree yonder. He's probably lonesome for company.
I don't like owls. They bring nothing but bad luck.
That's just an old Comanche notion.
Some Comanche notions are real. Owls are bad medicine.
Andy lost himself a while in memories of his Comanche life. He reached for his rifle.
Hello, the camp! All right, if I come in.
Come ahead.
Rusty was watchful, but didn't seem worried. Andy's instincts told him to keep his hand on a gun. The rider dismounted at the edge of the firelight and tied his horse where it would not kick dust into the cook fire. He appeared to be of middle age. He had several days' growth of whiskers, though his hair was cut short. If he carried a weapon, it was hidden.
Glad I seen your fire. I was about to make a cold camp, and a hungry one.
You're welcome to what's left of a skinny turkey. You've traveled a ways by the looks of you.
Several days, but I think I'm getting close to what I'm looking for. Y'all know anything about a ranger camp out this way?
Reckon we do. You thinking about joining up?
Meet you on the rangers? Not hardly, but I got business with them.
You got a quarrel with the rangers?
No, I stay away from the law and hope it stays away from me. Took me a long time to learn that, and I got the gray hair to show for it. You say you know where the camp is at?
We're headed that way ourselves.
You're rangers?
I am. Rusty's fixing to be. Is there something we can do for you?
The ranger's been keeping something of mine.
Andy burned to ask for more details, but he considered it ill manners to be inquisitive without a clear reason. The visitor attacked the remnant of turkey as if he'd not eaten in 2 days. Andy handed him a cup of coffee. The stranger blew steam from the cup and drank it without waiting for it to cool.
It ain't much, but it's the best we can do traveling across country.
It's mighty fine. Where I've been, they don't know nothing about making coffee or much of anything else. Couldn't be no better if you'd served it on golden plates. I'm obliged. Be all right with you fellers if I spread my roll here tonight and ride along with you tomorrow?
I don't see any reason not to.
I ought to let you know right off. I just came from a stretch in the penitentiary. You might not be comfortable with the likes of me around.
If you escaped, we'll be honor-bound to take you in.
No, I served my time and got out legal. They gave me a few dollars and a suit of clothes. Said they didn't want to see my ugly face no more. And I promised them they wouldn't.
As long as you've paid up fair and square, I don't see where we've got any kick coming. I'm Rusty Shannon. This is Andy Pickard.
My name's Tennyson. Lige Tennyson.
Have you got a boy that goes by the name of Scooter?
You know him?
I know him.
Andy stared into the fire, his stomach uneasy. He was sure now why Lige Tennyson had come looking for the Rangers.
Pardon me for a moment, gents. Gotta take care of nature's business.
Tennyson walked off into the darkness to take care of necessities. Andy turned to Rusty with a frown.
We can't let him take Scooter away.
He's the boy's daddy.
But he's an outlaw. He's been in the pen.
He's served his time.
What if he goes back to his old ways and drags Scooter along with him? We can't let that happen.
If his mind is set, the only thing apt to stop him would be the court. You know a good judge?
I don't even know a bad judge. Well, Judd Hopper. I just know that kid was on the road to hell before me and some of the others took him by the scruff of the neck. We may not be able to rescue him the next time.
It won't help for you to fret. If the boy's daddy wants him, there's not much you can do.
Maybe the captain can.
And maybe Tennyson has decided to walk a straight line. I've known men that slipped once, but never did it again.
An old horse doesn't change his color. I've got a bad feeling way down in my gut.
On the road to the camp in the morning, Rusty noticed the droop of Andy's shoulders. Andy studied Scooter's father as they rode. It had long seemed to him that there should be something in a criminal face that marked it as different. He could find nothing unusual in Tennyson's, unless it was the restless eyes constantly searching. He had seen the same characteristic in frontiersmen used to being in Indian country, ever on the lookout for danger. Watchfulness was not necessarily a sign of a criminal mind. Tennyson seemed to feel Andy looking at him. He turned his head and smiled.
I bet he's grown up to be a man, almost. It's hard to picture him that way. Last time I seen him, he stood about waist high to a tumbleweed.
You may not know him, and he may not know you. You might have grown too far apart to fit back together again.
Yeah, give us a little time. Blood will always tell.
Blood. That was what Andy worried about. Lige Tennyson's blood ran in Scooter's veins. It was an outlaw strain.
Scooter's come a long way. Sergeant Holloway's been schooling him in reading and writing and figures. It'd be a shame to take him away from that.
I studied a few books while I was boarding with the state, and I was always pretty good at figuring up sums. I'll teach him all I know.
Andy couldn't think of anything bland to say about that, so he shut his mouth. Lige knew too many of the wrong things. They rode into camp at mid-afternoon and reined up in front of the headquarters tent. Sergeant Holloway stepped out, his turkey-tracked eyes pinched against the sunshine. Holloway gave Tennyson a glance, then turned to Andy and Rusty.
Rusty Shannon! It's good to see you back. You figuring to stay a while?
If you all'll have me.
Andy, where's Farley? Don't tell me he decided to resign.
Farley got shot up a little. I left him with his family till he heals up enough to ride.
Andy was about to give Holloway the details when the captain emerged from his tent.
Howdy, Rusty. I heard what you told the sergeant here. Welcome back. Andy, I received a wire saying you and Brackett delivered your prisoners all right.
Delivered and signed for. But Jace Landon didn't stay a prisoner for long.
So I understand. Jailbreak?
Yes, sir. They'd snuck him out of the jail before Private Brackett and I even arrived to try to keep the hoppers from killing him outright. We didn't even know till after we'd driven the gang of them off.
Dick Landon came up in time to hear most of it. He smiled broadly as he listened to the account of his brother's flight.
I'd figure he'd get away if he even had a ghost of a chance.
Got away slicker than wagon grease, Dick. My guess is that he put the county line behind him as fast as his horse could run. He left a bunch of disappointed hoppers, not to mention the county judge.
Judd Hopper. That old son of a bitch has stolen half the county.
Sheriff Truscott seemed like a decent sort, considering what all he's got to deal with.
But he's got Judd Hopper's leash around his neck.
Tennyson listened intently, saying nothing as his eyes cut from Andy to Dick to the captain.
Pickett, tell me when Brackett got wounded. You sure you shot whoever did it?
I saw him fall and grab his leg.
There's nothing so stupid as a feud, and Texas seemed to be suffering an epidemic of them. The trouble isn't over just because you all managed to ride away. It may follow you out here.
Any shots we fired were in self-defense, plain and simple.
And from what I know of that county, the court belongs to the Hoppers. If they take a notion you've thrown in with the Landons, your testimony in court wouldn't be worth a continental. I'll need you to write a full report at your first convenience. Perhaps I can get it to Austin ahead of any protest from the judge or the sheriff.
The captain turned his attention to the visitor, and Lige actually took a step back.
Who are you?
I'm Tennyson. Lige Tennyson.
Somehow that has a familiar ring.
Well, I'm sorry to say that too many people used to know my name. 5 years down at the State Hotel has taught me that the outlaw road is all uphill, through flint rocks and cactus. But I've wrestled with the devil, and I finally pinned him to the floor.
That's well and good, but what brings you to this camp?
I've come to claim my son. He's a boy called Scooter.
That's so. I believe I do see a family resemblance.
Yeah, the Tennyson blood has always showed out strong. Ain't gonna be no trouble about me taking my boy, is there?
I'll have to satisfy myself that it's the right thing to do. I want to see what the boy says.
He's his daddy's son. He'll want to go.
That I shall determine for myself. Follow me, Mr. Tennyson.
The captain strode toward the cook tent. Tennyson took long steps to catch up with him. Andy trailed along. Rusty stayed behind, talking to Holloway. The black cook looked up from his Dutch ovens, puzzled by the crowd converging on him.
Howdy, Captain. A little early for supper. Got coffee ready, though.
We're looking for Scooter.
He out dragging up firewood. Ought to be back right soon. He ain't got in no trouble, has he?
No trouble. His father's come to see him.
Bo seemed at a loss for words. He started to extend his hand, but reconsidered and drew it back. He wouldn't expect a white stranger to shake with him.
You're Scooter's daddy. You and him been away from one another a long time.
Too long. But I'm fixing to make it up.
Bo looked at the captain and at Andy, a silent pleading in his eyes.
I hope you ain't fixing to take him away. That boy's been right smart of help to me.
Instead of replying to Bo, Tennyson turned to the captain, frowning.
You got him taking orders from a nigger?
He listens to all of us. That's how a boy learns.
Not a boy of mine. I want him growing up proud and strong. He's got no business playing servant to anybody. Least of all another servant.
The captain's face flushed as he struggled for an answer. Andy nodded his fists. Scooter approached on horseback, dragging several long dead tree branches at the end of a rawhide rope. He brought them up even with a remnant of wood pile and jumped to the ground. He retrieved the rope and coiled it.
That ought to last a couple days, Bo. You want me to chop it up?
Bo's eyes were troubled. He looked down at the spoon in his hand.
You're through doing chores around here, son.
Scooter noticed the visitor for the first time. He blinked in confusion. Tennyson walked over to him.
Don't you recognize your old daddy?
Pa?
Son, I've come to fetch you away from this place. It's time me and you was partners again.
He opened his arms. Scooter hesitated another moment, then accepted his father's hug.
Pa, I didn't know who you was.
Well, 5 years make a lot of changes in a man. Not as many as in a boy. Whew, you growed a sight bigger than I expected. You might near a man.
Might near.
Have you missed me?
I didn't think I'd ever see you again.
There was times I wondered, too. But you'll see a lot of me from now on. We got places to go, things to do.
Where are we going?
We'll talk about that. How long before you're ready?
Is it all right with you, Captain?
Son, you're free to do whatever you want to. You just be sure you know your mind.
This is my daddy. Bo, you're always talking about scripture. Don't it say in the book I'm supposed to obey my daddy?
It ain't for me to tell you what you should do. All I know is that you've been a changed youngin' since you've been with us.
Daddy, these rangers have treated me real good.
But they ain't your kin. Blood is what matters most in this world.
Scooter pondered his dilemma, his freckled face twisting.
I guess I belong with my daddy, Captain.
If that's your choice.
Scooter, you were riding with outlaws when we found you. You don't want to be doing that again?
I'll be riding with my daddy.
Andy wanted to grab the boy and shake him until he changed his mind, but he couldn't bring himself to lay a hand on Scooter.
You're making a mistake.
Leave him alone, Pickett. I told him the choice was his.
But he's making the wrong one, Captain.
Keeping a boy away from his kin is like cutting off the roots to a tree. It ain't right. He needs to know who he is and who his people are.
Pa, we don't have to leave today, do we?
Stay a little longer, and I'll fix this boy a supper like he ain't never had before.
Supper? Hey, sounds all right to me. My horse is about to give out anyway.
Tennyson slung his arm around Scooter's shoulders, and the two started to walk off. Rusty glanced at them as he walked over to Andy.
Well, that looks settled.
Staying for supper. Maybe this will give me the time to talk Scooter out of the notion.
Careful. If you push him into a decision he comes to regret, he'll resent you the rest of his life.
If he makes the wrong decision, he'll resent me for not advising him better.
Looks like you're a rim fired either way you go.
Andy watched Tennyson steer off and intercept Dick Landon. The two got to chatting, and Scooter stood off a ways, still a bit stunned. Andy frowned, but then turned as Bo joined him and Rusty, his face long and sad.
When he first come here, I felt like skinning him alive. But us all working together, we made a pretty good kid out of him. Now maybe he'll still decide not to go with his daddy.
Maybe. But if my real daddy was to show up, I guess I'd want to go with him. Kin is kin.
Yeah, there's a difference. Your real daddy was a peaceful farmer, so they say. He wasn't no outlaw.
Andy noticed that Tennyson nodded pleasantly to Dick and then wandered off with Scooter in tow.
Excuse me for a minute, Rusty. Bo?
Andy walked over to Dick, glancing toward the direction Tennyson had taken.
Hey, Dick. What do you want with you?
He asked a lot of questions. Told me he heard talk in the pen about the fight between the Landons and the Hoppers. I told him I've been trying to stay out of it, but it's hard when so many people are trying to hunt down my brother.
Maybe Jace has got to Mexico by now.
I doubt he'd go there without Flora. No, he'll stay close enough to keep in touch with her and the rest of the family.
Then he's always in danger of being found.
Them that find him, I wish they hadn't.
Andy had expected trouble to come sooner or later from Sheriff Oscar Truscott, or at least his deputy, Biggin Hopper. He had not expected the county judge to show up at the ranger camp in a buggy, sided by Biggin and another Hopper on horseback. Andy remembered Biggin calling this one Harp. The family resemblance was strong. Judge Hopper looked to be in the final stages of dyspepsia. He stopped at the headquarters tent first, conferring a while with the captain. The captain, in turn, sent for Andy. The captain's face was sober, but Andy could sense anger simmering beneath the surface.
Private Pickett, Judge Hopper has made grave charges against you and Private Brackett.
We expected somebody would.
He wondered why Sheriff Truscott had not come instead of the judge. He had sensed almost from the first that friction existed between the sheriff and his in-laws. Biggin poked a thick finger toward Andy's face.
This man and his partner contrived for a prisoner to escape.
And how did they do that? Private Pickett brought me a signed release certifying that the prisoner had been delivered into the sheriff's hands. All further responsibility was the sheriff's.
They claimed they'd searched him, but he had a gun on him. He forced the jailer to turn him loose.
Didn't you or the sheriff search him too before he went into the jail?
We took you all's word.
I distinctly remember seeing you feel of Jace's pockets.
Well, he must have had it someplace else. In his boot, maybe. We trusted you rangers to be sure he didn't carry any weapons when you turned him over to us.
He didn't.
Andy was gratified that the Hoppers evidently had not figured out something that seemed obvious to him. Flora Landon had slipped her husband the derringer. He didn't want to make their job easier, or the woman's life harder than it already was.
One of them rangers wounded a cousin of mine, took a chunk out of his leg, and he's never going to walk straight again.
The way most of them were liquored up that night, he wasn't walking very straight then.
The captain frowned at Andy, a quiet signal for him to tread lightly. The judge looked up the row of tents.
Where's that other ranger? The one named Brackett? Why is he not out here?
He is recuperating from a wound some of your people inflicted upon him.
I asked you where he is, Captain.
And I have chosen not to say. Any business you have with him, you can take up with me.
We understand you got a man here by the name of Landon.
Yes, Private Dick Landon.
Do you know he's a brother to the fugitive?
I do, but I've kept Private Landon here in camp or on assignment nearby. You cannot implicate him in this fiasco.
He didn't have to be there. I'm betting that him and Pickard and Brackett were in cahoots. And I'm betting he knows where his brother's at. He may even be hiding him somewhere close to this camp.
I've sworn out a warrant for the arrest of Pickard and Brackett and your ranger Landon. I intend to bring them before the grand jury.
You are out of your jurisdiction.
The judge removed some papers from his vest pocket. The captain planted his feet a little farther apart. Nevertheless, he gave the documents a cursory inspection.
Signed by Judge Judd Hopper. I wonder why the Hopper name does not surprise me.
I was duly elected by the voters of the county. Those papers are as legal as if they were signed by Sam Houston himself.
I cannot accept these. I don't know if the signature is genuine.
I just told you.
I don't know if you are genuine. You have shown me no documentation to prove that you are who you say you are.
You can see my badge.
Any half-sober silversmith can counterfeit a badge. The men you seek are rangers under my command, duly sworn. You will not have them unless I receive direct orders from the Adjutant General.
Well, he's way the hell over to Austin.
Well, probably. If he's not away on an inspection tour somewhere across the state. I suggest you go to Austin and wait for him.
We ain't done yet. You'll be wishing you'd never heard of us Hoppers.
Oh, I already do. Leave this camp, or I shall place you under arrest for disturbing the peace. I may come up with another charge or two if I set my mind to it.
Andy watched the judge's face flush a deep red. He thought Hopper might be in some danger of bursting a blood vessel. Biggin gave the judge a cautionary look.
Better ease off, Uncle. You know what the doctor told you about them conniption fits. Captain, looks to me like he needs a drink.
We do not keep liquor in camp.
Some water, then.
There's a whole river full of it down yonder.
You'll regret this. Biggin, get me out of here.
Biggin and the judge swept out of the tent. The silent Harp followed a length behind. Andy surmised that he simply rode in his kinsman's shadow. Sweating heavily, Andy shook his head.
Thanks, Captain. I was afraid you might give them what they asked for.
The Rangers stand by their own.
These hoppers are a hard bunch. From what I heard, so are the Landons. Dick is an exception.
Perhaps. Given sufficient provocation, there's no telling what any man might do, including yourself. I gather you have had no experience with a real Texas family feud.
Not like this one.
Well, they can be vicious. They can draw in an entire community, including people who are no blood kin at all. Back in the time of the Republic, two groups known as the Regulators and the Moderators went to war against one another. Took Sam Houston and the Texas Army to stop that bloodshed.
I've heard about that one.
Sometimes it's hard to stay neutral, but we have to. It's our job to keep the peace, even if we have to kill some people to do it.
Biggin Hopper is a determined man, and so is the judge. Do you think they'll just turn around and go back?
I'll see that they do. I'll send Len Tanner as an escort to see the three of them safe from Indian attack the first 40 or 50 miles.
There hasn't been an Indian attack around here in years.
And we want to keep it that way.
Andy thought by the time the Hoppers listened to a one-sided conversation from Len for 50 miles, they wouldn't want to come back. He could talk the ears off a dead mule. The ranger company had given Scooter an unclaimed 14-year-old horse recovered from a thief, along with an old saddle and bridle acquired the same way. He was as proud as if the rig were brand new and the horse a 3-year-old. He rode beside his father, who hadn't told him their destination, but had set out after breakfast in an eastward direction. A squirrel stared at them from the limb of a pecan tree.
There's supper.
He drew his pistol. The squirrel toppled, its head gone.
Man, I never seen a ranger shoot like that.
Nah, it ain't nothing you can't learn to do. Just gotta set your mind to it. I'll learn you. Now go find that one before some critter does.
Scooter went to retrieve the squirrel. He returned, holding it with a huge grin on his face. He clambered back up into the saddle.
Keep watching for another. We can have us a regular feast as good as what that darky's been fixing.
Ain't many can cook like Bo.
Them rangers had no business letting you do chores for the likes of him. You're white, and don't you ever forget it.
Being black ain't Bo's fault. He's good people.
Well, as long as he knows his place.
At dusk, they sat before a campfire, watching two squirrels broiling on the ends of long sticks.
Been a long time since we camped together. So long I can barely remember it.
We'll do it a lot more. We're partners, me and you. I done a lot of camping when I was younger. Bet you didn't know I lived for a few years up in the Cherokee Nation.
With the Indians?
Well, they was good Injuns.
I didn't know there was any good ones. Comanches come awful close to killing me once. I hid out where they couldn't find me, but they sure tried. They come so close, I swear I could smell their breath.
The Cherokees are a different breed. I had me some good friends amongst them, and we cut some real shines together. Of course, I was a sight younger then. I got in mind to go back up to the nation and find me a Cherokee wife. They each got a right to some land. Me and you could get us a good little farm that way.
You'd marry an Indian just to get some land?
It ain't easy for a poor man to get a hold of good land these days. Besides, there's other advantages to being married. Me and your mama had a pretty good life together. I miss her.
I don't know how I take to having an Indian mother. I keep thinking about them Comanches wanting to scalp me. I'd wonder if she had the same notion.
Them Cherokees live like white people. Got their own government. Even got their own newspaper.
Still, I don't know as I'd like it. I might not go with you up there.
You'll go where I say. The good book says to honor your father.
You've read the good book?
Parts of it.
You believe everything it says?
The parts I agree with. I heard a lot of preaching when I was back yonder working for the governor. So we'll follow the book, and you'll go where I go.
And where'll that be?
Back where that feud is going on. I talked to Dick Landon, and I watched that judge and the deputies. I figure a man good with a gun ought to be able to hire out to one side or the other for high dollars. That'd set us up fine for going to the Cherokee Nation. But first we need us a little road stake.
Road stake?
Traveling money. There's a nice little bank over in Kerrville. I think I could talk them into making us a loan.
When you say loan, you're really thinking robbery.
Robbery is an ugly word. Borrowing touches softer on the ear.
I doubt as the Rangers would see the difference.
You're not with the Rangers anymore. It's time you quit worrying about what they think.
I was with Arliss and Brewster and another feller when they held up the bank in Brownwood. scared me near as bad as them Comanches did.
Yeah, there's nothing to be scared of when you know what you're doing. Watch me and learn. Every boy needs to master more than one trade.
The Rangers had told Scooter that Kerrville and several other towns in the hill country had a strong German influence. They explained that in the years before the war, many groups of Europeans, German, Polish, Alsatian, Irish, had immigrated into Texas, usually settling into enclaves among their own kind, where they felt comfortable. All he knew about Germans was that they talked differently from most people, though they looked like just about everybody else. Scooter wondered if the men in the bank would understand Lige's words. But, of course, they would understand the meaning. Everybody knew what a gun meant when they looked at it from the front end. He was sure Andy and Bo and everybody else back in camp would be furious at him and Lige both. But he knew he couldn't talk his father out of the notion. Lige was better at talking than at listening. Lige gave the bank several minutes scrutiny.
I was in there 6 or 7 years ago. Doubt it's changed much.
You robbed it before?
I looked at it as a loan. Never intended to keep the money permanent. I always figured on paying it back someday when I could. Just ain't been able to. Besides, it ain't right some people having so much money and some not having none. What the government ought to do is take up all the money in the country and divide it equal. When you look at it that way, all I'm doing is seeing that we get our share. That's what democracy is all about.
Scooter saw three horses tied in front of the bank. He wondered if their riders would stand idle while Lige single-handedly robbed the place.
Hadn't you better go in and look things over first, Pa?
He might recognize me from last time. Best thing is to get straight to business. Now, you get back in the saddle and hold my horse. I'm liable to be in kind of a hurry when I come out.
Hand shaking, Scooter took the reins his father handed him.
What if things go wrong and you don't come out?
Then run like hell. The penitentiary ain't no place for a grown boy.
Lige turned away, carrying his saddlebags over one arm. Scooter's stomach churned as he climbed back onto his horse. He tried to ease the tension by pretending that his father was only teasing him, that he actually intended to negotiate a legitimate loan. The fantasy faded like a wisp of smoke. The truth was as solid and forbidding as that stone bank building.
Howdy, Scooter. What are you doing so far from camp?
Scooter turned, trembling. Ranger Johnny Morris walked toward him with a friendly smile on his face. He remembered that the captain had sent Johnny on a mission of some kind a few days ago.
With my pa. He came and got me.
Your pa? I thought he was in... Where's your pa now?
He went in the bank.
The bank?
Johnny turned on his heel, drawing his pistol as he ran. He barely had time to enter the front door before Scooter heard a shot from inside. Lige rushed out, a smoking pistol in one hand, the saddlebag slung over the other arm. He tossed the bags to Scooter and grabbed the reins from Scooter's hand.
Hang on to them bags. Hold them tight.
He swung into the saddle and aimed toward the open bank door. Someone stepped quickly back out of sight.
Let's go. This town ain't got no friendlier.
Scooter was too frightened to talk until they'd cleared the outskirts of town. They galloped eastward alongside the rock-strewn Guadalupe River and tall cypress trees. Looking back, he could see no one in pursuit, but he reasoned that they would soon be coming.
I hope you didn't kill somebody.
Everything was going just dandy till some fella come storming in with a six-shooter. Wasn't nothing I could do but shoot him before he could shoot me.
That was a ranger. He was a friend of mine.
When it comes to the law, us Tennysons ain't got no friends.
Did you kill him?
Things went too fast. I just know I hit him. He ought to have minded his own business. I was minding mine.
That is his business, chasing robbers.
Don't call me a robber again, or I'll take my belt to you. I swear. Youngins these days got no respect.
You ain't a robber. What are you?
A rebel. They got too many laws in this country, and I fought against damn near all of them. I was born free, and I intend to stay that way.
The Rangers will all be after us now, and they don't stop in no county lines.
The news from Kerrville brought all the off-duty Rangers to the headquarters tent. The report was that a bank robber had badly wounded Johnny Morris. A boy had been with him. The message did not offer any names, but Andy was sure Lige Tennyson was the culprit. Scooter was a witness at the least, perhaps even an unwilling accomplice.
Captain, I had a bad feeling about Tennyson from the start. I want to go over there.
I don't think I should let you. You're too close a friend to the boy.
Everybody in camp was friends with Scooter. He's liable to end up killed if we don't get him away from that outlaw daddy.
All right. I'm sending Sergeant Holloway and Rusty Shannon, and you can accompany them. Saddle up. You're leaving 20 minutes.
Rusty and Andy were sitting on their horses in front of the headquarters tent when Sergeant Holloway came out carrying his rifle. They had blanket rolls tied to their saddles, grub from Bo's kitchen hanging in cloth sacks. The sergeant walked to where a ranger had his horse saddled and waiting. He mounted up and nodded to Andy and Rusty, who nodded back. As one, they rode out. The three rangers rode far into the night, following a wagon road that wound between the hills. Andy judged that it was past midnight when they rode up to the jail in Kerrville. For the last couple of hours, he had felt the horse gradually tiring beneath him. He doubted the animal had another hour of travel left. The sergeant walked to the jail and knocked on the door till a sleepy-headed deputy sheriff opened it, holding a lamp so he could see the faces.
Well, I was sort of expecting you, rangers, but not at this hour tonight.
Rangers don't get much sleep when outlaws are on the prowl. How's Johnny Morris?
He'll live, but he was hard hit. Gonna be a long time before he does any rangering again.
And where's he at?
Over at the doctor's house. I wouldn't go beating on the door now, though. Him and the doctor both need sleep. You can bunk down here till daylight. I got some empty cells.
Now thank you. We'll need to put our horses away first. I want to talk to witnesses as soon as we can. We're pretty sure we know who the culprit is.
The ranger told us the boy's name is Scooter Tennyson. The robber was the boy's daddy.
Did Scooter help with the robbery?
The ranger said it looked to him like the kid was holding the horses. Said he hoped the young'un didn't realize what was going on.
For the time being, we'll give Scooter the benefit of the doubt, Andy. But if he knew what his daddy was doing and he helped, we'll have to consider him an accessory.
He's just a kid.
A kid can pull a trigger.
Holloway had little use for a bed after sunup, nor was he sympathetic with others who would rather sleep than meet the new day. He rousted Andy out of the cell, and the three men had washed up while the deputy cooked them breakfast. Andy appreciated the fresh eggs, though the deputy cooked them too long and gave them a scorched flavor. The biscuits were soft and warm. He smeared them liberally with fresh butter and dipped them in blackstrap molasses. Good biscuits can make up for a lot. His thoughts ran to Scooter. He wondered where the boy was now, camped out along a trail somewhere more than likely, possibly hungry and frightened. He thought of Johnny Morris lying in the doctor's house in pain from a bullet wound that could easily have killed him.
Damn that Lodge Tennyson.
Andy kept glancing at the sergeant, wanting him to hurry his meal. Holloway took note of his impatience.
In due time, Johnny may still be sleeping.
The robbers headed east along the river road. We trailed them a ways, but we lost their tracks because they got mixed with so many others. There's no telling which way they went once they got plumb clear of the town.
Thanks. We'll go check on Johnny first, then see what we can find out.
Johnny Morris was awake and propped up in bed. His face was pale, his cheeks drawn in, but his eyes lit up when he saw his fellow rangers.
I thought for a while I was fixing to go absent without leave, Sergeant Holloway.
That'd be desertion. You're too good a ranger for that. We figured the robber was Lige Tennyson. Are you sure it was Scooter you saw?
It was him, all right. I was surprised to see him sitting there holding a second horse. When I asked what he was doing, he said he was waiting for his daddy. I remember that his daddy was supposed to be in the pen, so I figured he didn't go in the bank to make a deposit.
And you set out to stop him?
Bank was dark. Coming in from the daylight, I couldn't see much. The robber shot me before I got a good look at him.
Reckon Scooter knew what his daddy was up to?
I don't know, Andy. Maybe. Maybe there wasn't nothing he could do about it.
Well, he could have ridden away and left his father.
You couldn't expect him to do that, Sergeant. He hadn't seen his daddy in 5 years. He wouldn't leave him so soon.
In the eyes of the law, he's old enough to make choices, even the hard ones.
The deputy arrived and nodded to the gathered men.
I went to the bank to get some more information. The holdup man was definitely Lige Tennyson. He hit the bank before, it seems. One of the tellers was smart. He filled the saddlebags with low-denomination bills and a stack of blank countercheques so that the bank's loss is minimal. I bet Tennyson was sore as hell when he stopped to count his loot.
Coming up short, he'll likely pull another robbery before long. I'll wire Austin a description, and the Adjutant General's office will send it across the state. I doubt that Tennyson has any idea how the telegraph lines have spread during the time he was in the pen.
Every time he does it, he puts Scooter in danger. Sooner or later, they'll run into somebody who's a good shot.
We'll try to pick up his trail, Andy. Maybe we'll have better luck than the townsfolk did.
Lige Tennyson sat in his saddle, scowling. He'd been in a dark mood since he had stopped to open the saddlebags and find out how rich he was. Scooter watched him uneasily, fearful that he might become the whipping boy for his father's frustrations. So far he hadn't, but Scooter remembered harsh punishment inflicted long ago for minor infractions.
Damn Teller with his clean white shirt and necktie. A dirty crook is what he is, cheating me this away. I wouldn't have put it past him to stuck the real money in his pockets and then claim I got it all. I'd go back and blow his lamp out, but the town will be swarming with rangers by now. We gotta keep moving.
Scooter figured his father was probably right about the rangers. He wondered if Andy and the others were on the trail right now. Lige had been careful to stay on the river road at first, so their tracks would be difficult to separate from the others. They had turned off at a place where the road crossed a field of gravel deposited by some long-ago flood. They hadn't left a track that he could see. He was torn between a wish that the rangers would catch up with them and a fear that if they did, they might shoot first and discuss consequences later. He had heard enough talk in camp to know that at times it was considered good judgment to bring a prisoner in dead rather than alive. Under stressful circumstances, the rangers were prone to be both judge and jury.
We ain't got near as much money as I figured. We're gonna have to find us another loan.
We don't have to borrow money that way. We could work and earn it, fair and square.
Doing what? I never was no good at a town job. Tried clerking in a store once. Pretty soon I was talking to myself. I'd done a little work as a ranch hand, but I never saw an outfit that didn't have a bunch of rank horses they expected you to ride. I'm getting too old for that. Banks, now. That's something I know right smart about. You just walk in, get their attention in the right way, and they'll generally loan you anything you ask for.
Sometimes I got guards with guns.
If you aren't money, you gotta go where the money is at.
They came in sight of a modest frame farmhouse. Lige reined up and signaled for Scooter to stop. He studied the place a while.
Huh. Crops ain't well tended. Weeds look to be doing better than the corn.
Scooter smelled wood smoke and saw that it was coming from the backyard. A skinny, middle-aged woman carried water from a steaming wash pot to a wooden tub, her thin back bending under the strain. She began scrubbing clothes.
Widow woman, maybe. If she had a man, the weeds wouldn't be taking the field that way.
We ain't fixing to rob her, are we?
There's no gain in holding up poor folks. They got nothing to give you anyway. But maybe we can get us a woman-cooked meal. You're looking a little drawed.
Scooter had not had much to eat except for a squirrel and somebody's young shoat they'd caught rooting for acorns.
Whatever you say, Pa.
Lige and Scooter tied their reins to a leaning fence post. The woman raised up from her scrub board as they approached the rear of her house. She seemed unconcerned. Scooter supposed she reasoned that a man traveling with a boy at his side presented no threat. Lige touched fingers to the brim of his misshapen hat.
How do, ma'am? Me and my son are just passing through. We noticed that your garden stands in need of weeding. We wondered if we might trade a little service for a good meal. The boy ain't that proper in a while.
Scooter thought the woman looked a little like his mother when she gave them a weary but grateful smile.
Oh, that'd be a mighty welcome trade. My husband's laid up with a broke leg, and things around here have got away from me some. As soon as I get these clothes on the line, I'll see what I can cook up for you.
If you kindly direct us to where your husband keeps his working tools, me and the boy will get busy.
She accompanied them to a small frame barn where a hoe, a rake, and smaller tools were neatly arrayed.
You wouldn't see things in this shape if my husband was able to work. Neighbors come in now and again to help, but they got needs of their own to see after.
We'll do the best we can. Boy, there ain't but one hoe. I'll pull up the big ones by hand. You toil her along and cut down the little ones.
The woman smiled and went back to her chores. Scooter hefted the hoe and worked along the fence as his father pulled weeds left and right. Lige worked faster with his bare hands than Scooter could with the hoe.
Pa, you act like you've done this before.
Well, I got lots of practice while I was studying at the state school. They expect you to earn your keep. When we get that farm of our own up in the territory, we'll be doing a lot of this. Watch out you don't cut them tater vines instead of the weeds.
Scooter soon worked up a sweat. He wasn't sure he looked forward to that farm of their own, but maybe it would keep Pa happy enough to give up his forays into the banking business. Between them, they finished most of the garden before the woman waved them into supper. The food made up in quantity for what it lacked in variety.
It ain't fancy, but there's nourishment in it for a growing boy. Lucky we still got ham and fatback and such in the smokehouse from last winter.
Oh, it's mighty fine.
The woman's husband had limped to the table, aided by crutches. One leg was immobilized by splints bound securely with strips of cotton cloth.
Now, much obliged, you fellas. As you can see, been about as much use around here lately as teats on a boar hog.
It was obvious to Scooter that the place had been a long way from prosperity even when the farmer had the full use of both legs. The little furniture he saw looked as if its best service would be as kindling to start a blaze in a fireplace. Newspapers had been pasted to the wall in lieu of wallpaper. They might block the wind that pushed between the siding's raw pine boards, but they would do little to shut out summer heat or winter cold. The woman noticed Scooter's silent appraisal of the room.
It ain't much, but it's iron. We done it all ourselves. Grubbed it out of the ground, me and my husband, with the Lord's help.
Glory be to the Lord.
Scooter gave his father a startled glance. He doubted that his father had given the Lord much thought when he robbed the bank in Kerrville.
Y'all ain't in too much of a hurry. You're welcome to stay all night. Eat breakfast before you go on your way in the morning.
That's kind of you. We couldn't go much farther before dark.
Scooter observed that his father enjoyed other people's cooking far more than his own. That was probably one reason he was eager to find himself a Cherokee woman, beyond the possibility of profiting from her head right to land in the territory. Scooter worried that somebody might have picked up their trail and be following it even as they idled at this farmer's table, but Lige seemed not to share his concern. With a warm and solid meal in his belly, he appeared content to accept the world on its own terms. There being no sign of rain, Lige elected to go outside, spread a little hay on the ground, and unroll his blanket on top of it.
Ain't nothing healthier than the clean outdoors with the stars for your ceiling. For 5 years, the only stars I seen was through a high window with bars in it.
Pa, are you sure a farm is what you want? These folks have got one, and they're as poor as church mice.
Because they ain't got enough land. Me and you, we ain't gonna settle for nothing small like this. We're gonna have a big farm with a big house and lots of stock. We'll have cornfields stretching as far as the eye can see. I've had lots of time to plan it all out. I know just where everything's gonna be. The house, the barns, the fields.
Oh, that is gonna take lots of money.
The reason most people don't have enough money is they don't have the guts to go where it's at and get their fair share.
You said we ain't got much money, but I seen you leave a wad of it for them folks. You hid a roll of it in the sugar bowl when they wasn't looking.
Well, do good where you see the need, and the Lord will reward you. Next time, maybe he'll lead us to a bank where the teller ain't a crook like that last one was.
Sergeant Holloway held out little hope of finding Lige's and Scooter's tracks. Too many others had been made along the river road that led eastward from Kerrville, including those of the earlier posse. The sergeant was about ready to give up.
Anywhere there's a telegraph, the local authorities will be on the lookout for Tennyson and the boy, Andy. These modern communications are the wonder of the world. Did you know a man can board a train in New York and get to San Francisco in less time than it takes to ride horseback from Fort Worth to San Antonio?
Well, we're not going to San Francisco, and most of Texas doesn't have a railroad yet. Lots of places ain't even got a telegraph.
Easy there, Andy. We've come this far, Bill. Won't hurt us to try a little longer.
True, Rusty. Well, wouldn't want the captain saying we quit too quick. Andy, how's your tracking eye?
Nothing wrong with my eyes.
He had found long ago that he had better hunches than most people. He wondered if it might come from his association with the Comanches, who put a lot of faith in intuition, visions, and dreams. When the three riders reached a place where a flood had deposited a large bed of gravel at the bend in the river, he had one of those hunches.
If I was one to cover my trail, right here is where I'd quit the road. A buffalo herd wouldn't leave tracks in that gravel.
It's your hand. Play it.
Andy moved forward while Rusty and the sergeant waited so they wouldn't add their horses' tracks to any already there. He rode along the leading edge of the gravel deposit until he found the trail of two horses. A light shower had created a thin skim of mud. The tracks had dried hard enough to preserve them from the wind's destructive touch. His hunch told him these marked the passage of Lige and the boy. He waved his arm.
Now we're on the money.
Rusty dismounted and studied the tracks.
Yeah. One horse's forefoot turns out a little. Like he might have been crippled at some time.
That'd be Scooter's. I remember the old brown they gave him had a funny way of walking. Kind of paddle-footed. What about it, Sergeant?
We came to catch a bank robber. We're not doing it sitting here. Looks like he's headed almost due east. We can afford to lope up some. Even if we lose the trail a while, we ought to be able to cut it again. Maybe we can gain on him.
The second day, they'd not seen the trail in a while, but were traveling on faith and hope. Spotting a small frame house, they stopped to water their horses. A gaunt, hard-used farm woman came out to greet them.
I'm Sergeant Holloway of the Rangers, ma'am. We're obliged for the water. We'd be glad to pay for it.
I don't see how I can charge you for water. It's a gift from the Lord.
The Lord didn't dig that well for you, did he?
No, sir. Me and my husband done that. But the Lord was looking on and made sure we found water.
Well, here's a silver dollar. I'll pay the Lord his share next time I get to church. Been any strangers passed this way the last day or two?
Only people been by here lately was a man and a boy. Fine folks. They taken time to hold a garden for me. My husband is laid up and can't work.
Did you hear any names?
I don't recall that he ever introduced himself exactly. And the boy just called him Paul. Seems to me I heard him call the boy by name, but I can't remember what it was.
Could it have been Scooter?
I believe it was. You know them?
We do. Were they still traveling east when they left here?
They was, but I can't imagine what interest you Rangers would have in God-loving folks like them. Even after working for their keep, they left some money for us.
May I be so bold as to ask how much?
Close to $50. I wanted to give it back, but they was gone by the time I found it.
It doesn't make sense, him giving somebody money?
It's a waste of time to try and figure out people like Tennyson, Andy. They serve the Lord one minute and the devil the next. Trying to stay in good with both sides, I guess. Thank you for your time, ma'am. Let's go, fellas. He gave those folks most of the little bit he got in Kerrville. We'll be needing more. And we already wired Austin to send a warning to all the banks. Next time Tennyson tries to make a withdrawal, he may find himself looking down a dozen gun barrels.
What about Scooter, Sergeant?
Yeah, let's hope his daddy thinks enough of him to leave him out of harm's way.
I can't figure, Lige. If it was me and I was on the dodge, I'd go west to where law is scarce. I wouldn't go back where there's a badge on every section corner.
And you know how it is, Rusty. Where law is scarce, there aren't many banks either. A working man goes where the work is, or in Tennyson's case, where the money is.
If I didn't know better, I'd say he's headed almost directly toward my farm. But he'd have no reason to be going there.
Well, you can bet Tennyson knows what he's doing, or thinks he does. He wouldn't be traveling this direction without he had cause. I'd give a month's pay to know what it is.
The third day, Andy lost the trail and couldn't find it, although he crisscrossed several times, returning always to a generally eastward direction. Toward dark, the three rangers came upon a family of movers camping with a tarp-covered wagon and a trail wagon hitched behind. The wagon tongue was pointed west. A young boy herded half a dozen cows and a bull. Andy could only guess at the disappointments that had put these people on the road to new country and a fresh start. Holloway hailed them in an easy, smiling manner.
How far are you all headed?
Pecos River, a bust. We hear there's cheap land out there.
Cheap for a good reason, Andy thought. Charles Goodnight had called the Pecos River the grave of a cowman's hopes. But settlers were starting to drift out that way regardless. So long as there was new land, there was always a chance, or at least the illusion of one, even where it didn't rain enough to grow much more than greasewood and prickly pear.
You all seen a man and his son riding this way?
We did. They rode in the cab just as we was fixing to have supper last night. ate with us and rode on. Nice acting folks they was. Shy kind of a boy, though. Acted like he was scared to talk. I reckon he hasn't been among strangers much.
Did they give any names?
Not that I remember. And we didn't ask. I always figure if a man wants you to know what his name is, he'll tell you. If he doesn't want to, he's probably got a good reason.
Thank you kindly, and good luck to you folks.
Yes, sir, and to you.
The Rangers moved on, trying to find more sign of the Tennysons. The effort proved fruitless. They came across evidence of several campsites where fire pits had been dug and wood burned for cooking. Some were fresh enough to have been used within the last night or two, but Andy found no tracks he could identify as the paddle-footed Browns. Holloway looked discouraged. Andy feared he might decide to quit. He had another hunch that they were closer than they had been since they started, even if he could find no trail. But hunches wouldn't carry a lot of weight with the sergeant. He was inclined to believe only what he could see, hear, or feel. The land became increasingly familiar. Andy realized he had ridden over it with Rusty, looking for strayed cattle. Rusty glanced at the other two.
My farm is mighty close now.
You want to go by and see if everything's all right?
I haven't been gone long enough for much to have gone wrong. Unless Fowler Gaskin has come over and carried everything away. That lazy, light-fingered son of a bitch.
I used to have a neighbor like that. He finally threw a conniption fit and died. He never saw so many people smiling at a funeral.
I doubt the Lord is anxious for Fowler to show up. He'll probably outlive us all. Bill? My horse is tiring out. I expect they all are. How about we ride over to Sheriff Tom Blessing's and see if he can get us a change of horses?
We've already stretched pretty far past our district.
The Rangers didn't have to stop at county lines. They were free to operate anywhere in the state. However, efficiency required that they remain within their own appointed areas of responsibility unless in pursuit or on a specific assignment. They stopped at Rusty's farm. Nobody was there. A relief to Rusty.
I was half afraid we'd find Fowler taking up residence while I was gone. He did it once before when I was off chasing after Indians.
The fields were as desolate as when Andy had last seen them in the wake of the hailstorm. Some plants were making a feeble try at regrowth, nature's eternal effort at survival. But they were stunted and doomed to be killed by frost before they could mature. In contrast to the fields, the garden showed signs of fresh work. Freshly cut greenery.
Shanty's been over here. Let's get on to town. Stopping here is like visiting a graveyard.
At the sound of the three approaching horses, Shanty came out grinning.
Mr. Rusty, Andy, you all ain't already quit being rangers, have you?
Rusty smiled at Shanty as he and his companions reined up by Shanty's fence.
No, not yet, Shanty. This is Sergeant Holloway. We've been trailing a bank robber. He's got a boy traveling with him. Anybody like that pass this way the last day or two?
Not as I noticed. I see most folks that come along this road. But anyway, what would a bank robber want with me? I don't have nothing anybody'd want to steal.
This one might have given you money.
Then he sure ain't been by, because there ain't nobody giving me nothing.
I'm afraid we've played out our string, fellas. Tennyson may not stop till he gets halfway across Louisiana.
You mean we're turning back, Sergeant?
Well, I'll wire the captain and ask him what he wants us to do, Andy.
Well, as long as we're this close, don't you think we ought to go by the Brackett place and see about Farley? He may be healed up enough to go back to camp.
You and Rusty can do that while I stay in town and wait for the captain's answer.
Andy had a bitter taste in his mouth. He'd far rather be taking Scooter back to camp, but he might have to settle for Farley Brackett. At least he could see Bethel for a little while.